Okay, let's get started. Hi, everybody. Welcome. I'm Della from The Beauty of Play. And today we're going to be talking about narration and illustrations in homeschooling. So this shows up, both narration and illustration, in Waldorf and Charlotte Mason pedagogies, in both of them. In Waldorf, it shows up in the main lesson books mostly. And the main lesson books, they are notebooking, but they are kind of like writing your own textbook. And there's a lot of energy in the Waldorf pedagogy that goes into these textbooks. And if you think about it, that's a really good thing because you need the same, you need output from the child as much as input so that the information is processed and internalized. And so the main lesson book helps to do that. Similarly, for Charlotte Mason, she doesn't use notebooking as explicit, but she uses narration quite a bit. And we also see illustration of those things like nature study and so forth, which we've also used notebooking for. So both of those. And the wonderful thing about these tools, oh, before I forget, I want to tell you about this book, Know and Tell by Karen Glass. I will send a link in the replays. This book is fabulous at explaining narration and how to use it, the progression through the grades of what narration looks like, how to scaffold a child, and so forth. Okay. Narration and illustration do a lot for memory work and learning. And if you are part of my subscription, in the very first post on the community side, there is a post of tools for learning. And that goes over several different tools that help us learn and retain information or to have an understanding of a concept. Narration and illustration offer at least three, sometimes four of those. The first and the biggest is memory recall. By using illustration and narration, we are pulling forth memory recall. And they don't have to all be done by memory, but do as much from memory as possible and then fill in the gaps by going back and finding the information that wasn't retained. And this can be done orally or it can be done written. The second is spacing. The wonderful thing about narration for younger children, it's done on the same day, but often for older children, it's done after or several days after. And so you provide spacing in the information that you are learning. The other is dual coding. And this goes particularly for illustrations, that pictures, in addition to words, help us retain. In the book, Learning How We Learn by Barbara Oakley, she talks about this. That book, she has another book, and I can't, A Mind for Numbers, I believe, that discuss, it's an adult book, but this Learning How We Learn is a child's book, and it's written for young adults, and it goes over different things that help us learn, help us remember and process information. And dual coding is one of those, drawing pictures in addition to writing. Now, a lot of this is in note taking and doesn't require the care that is often done in Waldorf pedagogy for main lesson books. But either way, those pictures and words help us remember. And then the thing that I love most about narration and illustration is that it can be used in all the subjects. And I really do mean all the subjects. We even use it for math, which I'll talk about a little later. Okay, progression of narration. What narration and illustration look like for a young child is going to be really different from what they look like in an older child. And as we go through this seminar, I'm going to talk about how to scaffold children so that you support them in the use of narrations and illustrations, and that they get the most out of it. So when they are young, most of the narrations are oral and sometimes short, and they're usually directly after reading something. For instance, if you're reading a fable or a story, you may pause after a chapter and ask the child, or even after a picture book, and ask the child to tell the story back to you. Or you can also have the child tell it to you on a different day to review for spacing to see what happens. But a lot of the narrations in the early years are oral. And if you think about it, narration comes really naturally to us. Storytelling, telling what happens in the day, telling something that your child is excited about. Those are types of narration, and those are helping us to remember the information that we're engaging with. Here's another example in this illustration. Both of these are basic early illustrations. This first one is a dissection of the earth and its layers. And we did an activity before this where we were making the earth with beeswax modeling, and then dissected it to see the layers. And then we're discussing this after reading about the different layers in the book. You can see there's not a lot of writing. In fact, this may be, no, she is writing at this age. I was going to say this may be pre-writing, but she is writing at this age. So any writing that she does is going to be minimal, because our ability to narrate and compose information in our mind far exceeds the ability to write at that age. So we are separating those and scaffolding that. So her narrations are mostly oral here. And this diagram at the bottom is the life cycle of a star. We're using the diagram for her to narrate the process. So first we do the diagram. The illustration, we talk about what we're illustrating, and then later she will go back and narrate this illustration to me. But the narrations at this point are mostly oral. Here is the same kind of thing. She's doing the illustrations on her own. This piece is an observation log for progression of caterpillar growth and metamorphosis. So this was part of our nature study. I drew this chart in her notebook. You can see it's segmented, so there's a place for the date, and then she draws the picture, and then she tells me what to write, and I'm writing the information of her observations down in the notebook. And occasionally, you can see that she also here is writing a few of her own when she feels, but this is supported and scaffolded when they're young. They're not doing all the writing process of the narration there. And it's possible to use some of their narrations for copy work. So if they are giving oral narrations and you are transcribing those, you can pick a sentence or two, or if it's a short narration, the whole narration, have it up for them to use as copy work. This would be after writing, the letter recognition and writing has already started, maybe middle to end of first grade and second grade, depending on your child's skills. We also use our illustrations in particular for map work. And this is really helpful in history. Here, both of these pages are from a history block that we did on explorers. And this one is on Marco Polo, And the map work helps us to know where he went on his journeys. It also helps us to remember what he saw in the book. Here's another one on John Hay. And this, we're still in the copy work session here. And I think she's third grade. So the third grade, fourth grade, we start to transition a little bit. And you can transition earlier or later, depending on your child. Around third grade is when we started transitioning from oral to some written. And the transition is slow, and I want to talk about that transition in a few minutes. Not all the narrations will be written, but you do start to transition from having oral narrations that the parent or the teacher transcribes to having written narrations. But this one is still an oral narration that I've transcribed, typed up, and that she is using as copy work into her notebook. We, of course, do not do this process with every narration. If you take a look at this, this is one of her more creative pieces. She is narrating the information that we learned about Columbus's trip through the eyes of a parrot. Because she was pretty creative with it, it was pretty long. And that length to write, both for copy work and to go through any editing process, was too long. So not all of our narrations are used for copy work, and not all of our narrations go through the editing process that I'm going to show you in a few minutes. You can see how elaborate this one was for, it might have been second or third grade, but definitely too long for that copy work process at her age and for the child that she was. Okay, then we move from transitioning from oral to written. And this transition is a little bumpy one. And it is because of what I talked about later earlier. The mind and the intellectual ability to compose words, writing, is far exceeds the writing skills. And when you transition from written to oral, you can expect the narrations to become more simplistic. You can expect a little less effort on the mental portion of it because the writing portion takes so much effort to get through. It is a skill to learn to write and think at the same time. And because of this, there needs to be some grace in this transition and scaffolding. So first, not all of the narrations need to be oral. I mean, need to be written. Most of them you want to be oral during this transition, and then you're going to have one or two written thrown in there so that they can transition into writing. When you go through the written transition, there's an editing process that I want to talk about. In the beginning with the editing, it's mostly looking at expansion, right? They write a little today, and then you look at what is written, and then you write a little bit more the next day. We actually do a copy and paste method that I learned from Brave Writer. I want to say it's in Writer's Jungle, but I am not certain. It might be in a different program. And it's cut and paste. So like literally cut up the sentences and paste them. So for the beginning editing process, when you are transitioning from oral to written, what we do is type out, well, you can do this with written, oral also. You can type out the oral writing, or you can either type or take out their written work the same way, but you're cutting, you're dividing up the writing into sentences. In this case, there were only three sentences, that this was a piece of work. This is fifth grade, so this was a piece of work she wasn't putting a lot of effort into. But there's three sentences here. So that was the first day. The second day, we are cutting those sentences apart and putting them in the order that we want, that makes most sense. And then we are doing some expansion another day. So in the beginning, when you're transitioning, expansion or elimination, maybe there's a sentence that doesn't make any sense in that paragraph. You may want to take that out. But expansion and elimination are most of what you're doing here. As they progress, this gets a little more complex. This is a narration from last year. So this at the beginning of last year. So it's early sixth grade for her. And she is writing the narration after several days of information. We were studying Native America. So the first thing that we do is get it on paper. And sometimes this can take one day, sometimes it can take two, but we get the information on paper. So that's the first thing that we're doing, writing or giving the narration. The second thing that is done, if it is given orally, then the parent would transcribe that or type it out. Then we cut the sentences, or cut the paper out by sentences. And then we are arranging the sentences in an order. Now, all of this is not happening on the same day. We are writing for one day, maybe 2 days. And then the following day, we're cutting the sentences out, arranging them in order. And then we're looking to see what needs to be added, what needs to be eliminated. These are called expansion and eliminations in the Brave Writer work. So in this particular one, there definitely was narration or addition to this. And I think it's on a separate page, but she's arranged her sentences or rearranged her sentences. We've looked and we see that there's information that would help make things more understandable, clearer, and then also there's some information that we wanted to add to this. So that is then added. Most of the time at this point, we don't have too much elimination, but occasionally, even in my son's college classes, he gets to a point and he's like, this is not really relevant to what I'm writing about. I'm going to chuck that paragraph out. Same with kids, although it's usually sentences that are like, this sentence doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of your writing, so let's eliminate that. But definitely this is the time for expansion. So we are doing the cutting and the pasting and the rearranging, and sometimes the expansion on the same day. But the expansion can also be on a different day. From there, we are cutting and arranging again. So this process goes as many times as they are willing and able to do this to get a piece that works. Their tolerance for this process goes up as they get older. So middle school is a little better than elementary school. High school is a little better. College is far better for this process. And really, I mean, the editing, the very end, the editing process, no one really likes that, right? I'm sure there are some people, but it is not my favorite either. At the very end, after we have all the information that we want, it flows the way we want, we've rearranged the sentences and the structure, we expanded to add the material that we wanted, this is the point that we review spelling, grammar, and punctuation for our narrations. Now, I will say, if you guys have followed me for a while, or if you're part of my subscription, then you know that our spelling, grammar, and punctuation gets done in short Charlotte Mason lessons aside from this kind of work. So as we're going through this process and as we're working through a block, there are other side lessons that are happening on grammar, punctuation, and spelling. But before we enter it into the notebook, we just go through. So as we're doing this, I am picking words out for spelling. For instance, the first time that she's written it, I've chosen a few of the words that she's misspelled, and I've put them on a list so we can go over the graphemes for the phonemes and any word studies with suffixes and prefixes that need to be addressed and so forth. I'm just picking a few of those unless it's review, because I don't want to overwhelm her. But those are being done separate from the editing and narration process. And then at the end of that process, we're going through and making any corrections. Here for this, you can see we've just found the misspelled words and written the correct spelling above them. And even this process varies depending, we don't do this editing process for every single piece. And even when we do, the level that we do it at varies depending. And then when you're finished with all of that is when you rewrite the piece. And again, there's scaffolding here. If the child is younger, you know, fourth, fifth grade, occasionally you are just typing the piece out for them with their revisions. As they get older, they will be copying the piece back into their notebook. You kind of have to gauge the level for that. Some narrations, especially if they're really long narrations, might be a little much for them to rewrite into the notebook. But by, I don't know, middle school, it should be relatively easy for them. So this is the finished product on the right of that narration reproduced in as a final into her notebook. And then this on the left was a contextualization exercise that we did for that history unit. Here is another one. This was for the Haudenosaunee's Great Peace. We read the book Peacemaker, and she's retelling the story here. There was also some addition that was happening that's not shown in this one. But there on the right is the final piece for that, a couple paragraphs for that narration. And this would also be at the beginning of sixth grade. Now, this is an example. This was a narration that she gave probably second, maybe first grade. And you can see what I'm talking about here with how elaborate this narration is. This was not one that we wanted to use for an editing process, and definitely not one that we wanted to use for copy work for a first grader. Far too long. So in this case, she gave the narration, I typed it up, and we just pasted it into her notebook along with her illustration. Another time that we also don't go through a large editing process is when we're working in a block, like our physics block, where we're writing, doing narrations daily, putting things in our notebook daily, then we don't go through the process because of the bulk of narrations that we have going on here. So in those kind of instances, they get typed and place in the notebook. And you will also see more typed during the transition from oral to written narrations. Using narration for math. So especially when there is a concept that I really want her to remember, or when we are discovering a concept and we have that epiphany of this is how you do it, or this is how this works, we will stop and do a main lesson page for our math journal. So it is a narration and illustration for our math journal. We do these things for equivalent fractions. What are equivalent fractions? How do we find them? We do them for how to add fractions with unlike denominators, you know, concepts that I want her to remember. It can be as a review where I'm wanting her to recall that from memory and put it onto paper, or it can sometimes be for explicit instruction. This one here was for explicit instruction. There were all kinds of different things that we were doing to find the rules of divisibility. One was finding the pattern in the 100 charts for the twos, fours, and eights. And for the threes and nines, we were looking at digit sums. And we sat down together and placed this narration into the notebook. Here's another use of explicit instruction where I'm using illustration mostly in the notebook for things that I really want her to understand and conceptualize. So on the left was a comparison of monocots and eudicots for botany, and we were illustrating and going over the differences between the two. The one on the right was the concept of photosynthesis. So these two illustrations were for explicit instruction. I don't always do that. Sometimes the illustrations are just to go along with the narration to help with the memory recall. Sometimes I'm using illustrations for explicit instructions in this case, and also in the case with math and finding the rules for divisibility. And we can also use illustrations to support understanding. Now, you can really do this at any age. I used it a lot in the high school years, especially with the sciences, so that we could get an understanding of science. It was pretty common in, we used it in astronomy and we used it in biology. There's a lot of writing for history, but not a lot of illustration of concepts, although there is a lot of map work. So map work would be an illustration for that. So the illustrations in this case would come first. So on the left, you see a Punnett square here, and that was done on one day, and it was done to support the narration of Mendel's work on genetics in the following day, an understanding of recessive and dominant traits and how genes work. The same thing happened when we went over embryogenesis. And in this case, there were three different illustrations that happened that supported the narration. So these three illustrations are done, and then they are used for understanding and producing the narration. We also did the same thing with the circulatory system. Here are four different illustrations that he's done of the heart and the anatomy of hemoglobin, the arteries and veins and how they're constructed, and then the components, a chart of the components of the blood. So we've got two illustrations, maybe three illustrations that are going over diagrams of anatomy and how things work, and then a chart that goes over the components of the blood. And all of these things were used. Oh, there's additional ones that he did too. A pie graph of the blood components, and then the bottom is a time sequence graph. And I did not know these until I started homeschooling. They are invaluable, especially for biological processes, but also for history. I found it extremely useful when teaching World War I because there's so much going on in that war. But time sequence graph is what he did for the hemoglobin. Basically, what are the different factors involved and what happens, what influences what in which order. So this was done also before the narration. So then there was a narration on the circulatory system and the blood, including like its components, its travel through the heart, how the endothelial cells are produced and so forth. And this is also a diagram along the same way. This one is also a time sequence graph, but we have a diagram at the top influencing, and this is also used to scaffold. I feel like diagrams with labels are very helpful in understanding a process, making it visual, putting it on paper. And this is another form of illustration. And then those illustrations can be used to support the narration process. More visuals. And this is an example done in Earth Science last year. It is a repeat from what we did in the early years, from obviously more layered, more complex than in her first years of school. But we made a model of the Earth again in its layers with beeswax, dissected that, and then we're doing a diagram of those layers and their cross section. And then a day or two later, she will write a narration. She did write a narration on the layers of the Earth. So there's a layered process. It doesn't have to go that way, but I find that the narrations can often scaffold, or the illustrations can often scaffold the understanding of the narration. And it also works the other way, particularly in the early years. If they are doing their main lesson work and they have a narration in hand, it is helpful for them to review the narration and draw an illustration that, you know, goes with that narration. And that's it for today. I am going to stop the recording. And then I will answer any questions.